Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Miss Congeniality. I am so excited. It is our first episode of April, and today is going to be this month's guest episode. So we'll have one guest a month, and I'm really excited about this month's guest because she's just fabulous. I realized while I was doing some research about her, we've never had an Olympian as a guest on Miss Congeniality, but there's a first time for everything. So today you are going to hear a fabulous interview with my new friend, Gracie Gold. She is an Olympic figure skater and she's absolutely incredible. She just came out with a memoir and it really just is fabulous. I finished her memoir like in a day. I ripped through it. It's so inspiring, so raw, so honest, and really taught me a lot about figure skating. And even if you're not interested in like the Olympics or figure skating, I think that you'll just get a lot from her memoir. It's really, again, so raw, honest, and eye-opening. So definitely pick that up. But let's chat a little bit before we get to the interview because I feel like I haven't updated you guys in a little while. I am officially home for most of the month. I'm taking like a weekend trip here or there, but no heavy lifting in terms of travel. So I'm just settling back in. The weather is just horrible here in New York City. Like I was going to go grocery shopping after I finished recording this and I'm looking outside and it's raining. And I'm like, I just feel like I haven't gone outside in days. I know you guys feel me if you're on the East Coast right now. It's just like six straight days of rain. And I know April showers bring May flowers and all of that stuff. But I'm like, April gets a bad reputation. And as somebody who's pretty empathetic, I'm inclined to feel bad for her. Like she gets a shitty reputation and now she's upholding her reputation. It's like, I hate when people like play into stereotypes because the reason stereotypes exist is because like we created them. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like April, like you're creating your own stereotype, girl. Give us some sun. But it is so nice to be back in New York, back in Jersey. I love to travel, but there really is no place like home. Dorothy was not wrong when she said that. I'm trying to think of exactly what I've been up to other than just like organizing, spring cleaning, especially with my closet. I highly, highly suggest spring cleaning your closet. If you have like a spare hour, put on a podcast. Maybe it's this one. Maybe you pause this right now and get to spring cleaning and then start playing it and just dedicate an hour to sprucing up your space. Cause I don't know about you, but in the winter months, I just start hoarding everything. I don't want to go outside. And now I just have so much clutter and I wanted to declutter. So I did that. And that's really what I've been up to, just decluttering in a loop. I'm about to start. And just like that, I've watched like episodes here and there. It's the Sex and the City reboot, but I wanted to watch Sex and the City all the way through with my boyfriend before I like started in just like that in a dedicated way. I've seen like most of it, but not all of it. So we are going to start that. We just watched both Sex and the City movies. The second one didn't age well. Like, I can't express that enough. It might be the worst. Like, it just aged so fucking poorly. Like, Sex and the City as a whole aged poorly, but you're like, oh, it's the 90s. Like, of course this aged poorly. This movie is from, like, 2008, and it really is so problematic and offensive and just all around, it's a bit of an atrocity, but I was like, oh, he has to watch this movie in order to get the context for like the first episode of And Just Like That, which to be honest with you guys, I don't know if I'm going to be watching that because we all know, spoiler alert, Mr. Big has a heart attack and I just can't watch scenes of death and like sadness. It's just triggering to me, but I will say I am working on that. I started going to OCD therapy with NOCD, which is kind of like BetterHelp, an online OCD platform, and I have matched with a therapist that I really like, and we've done a few sessions to just see if I fit the OCD like diagnosis. And it's already been so eye-opening and affirming. I feel like I'm learning a lot and sort of just processing like what it means to have this diagnosis, because I don't know, she explained it pretty well to me, but she said a lot of times OCD can be overlooked because when your compulsions are mental and not physical, it can sometimes get clocked as anxiety. And because anxiety is so closely intertwined with OCD, there are people who can have generalized anxiety disorder and OCD, but a lot of times OCD can be misdiagnosed as generalized anxiety disorder. So we're still trying to figure out like what exactly I have going on, but there's definitely been a period of processing. And I honestly want to be open with you guys about all of this because I think the reason that I've been able to figure out what's going on with me is because I've listened to people online be open with me and be open with their audiences. My friend Haley Jacobson has OCD, and I think her content about OCD has really like completely established what OCD was to me and like redefined it as a term, because I had definitely the stereotypical view of what it is in my mind. And, you know, I want to be open and honest with you guys about my journey, because maybe it'll, you know, empower you to go out and sort of figure your own stuff out. And I feel really lucky that I have such supportive and loving people in my life that have been by my side through this whole process. And I'm just feeling really hopeful, because I think there was a long time that I was like, my anxiety is only getting worse. It's not getting any better. And I was really afraid. I was like, what if there's nothing I can do to help myself? And that was definitely like scary, I would say, like a scary thought. And that thought gave me more anxiety. And, you know, maybe it's not anxiety at all, or maybe it is anxiety, but it's a product of what I'm experiencing from OCD. So I'm getting the help that I need and that I deserve. And I hope that you guys can all do the same. I know we started talking about Sex and the City and we got here, but I wanted to talk about both. So now we have. But yeah, that's what I'm up to. Going to watch And Just Like That. And I'm just going to enjoy it for what it is. I'm not going to be taking any criticisms of And Just Like That, because I just want to like it. Do you know what I mean? It's like what Veronica and I were talking about last week. Like, I'm not going to show up to the discourse, because I don't need something so special to me, like such as Sex and the City, kind of upended. I'm enjoying it for what it is at this point, and I'm going to continue to do so. I am so excited for this weekend, because it's my first weekend back in New York City in over a month, and I'm just really going to enjoy a New York weekend. I'm going to have a girls' night with my friends, go on a date night with my boyfriend, and just, like, I'm so happy. I feel like I haven't had a true at-home New York weekend in so long, and I'm going to hopefully go out a little bit, stay in a little bit, and hopefully the weather starts to get a little nicer. But I feel like since last week we went over all of the pop culture updates, and I'm really just hunkering down, trying to stay like warm and dry from the outdoors this week and get some writing done. I don't have a ton of updates to share with you guys. So if you are ready, I am ready. You have no choice. We're going to get into the interview with Gracie Gold. She really is tremendous. And I did want to give a brief trigger warning before we start. We do discuss mental illness. We discuss depression, anxiety, and most specifically eating disorders and eating disorder treatment as it relates to Gracie's experience with all of that. If that's something that you don't feel comfortable listening to, or you feel like would give you anxiety, I totally understand. And I implore you to turn off this episode. We don't get into anything too intense, but we definitely do cover these topics for most of the episode. And I wanted to make sure to give you guys a pretty decent trigger warning before we get started, so that nobody feels caught off guard. I love you guys so much, and I hope you're having a stunning, beautiful, wonderful, gorgeous week and weekend if you're listening to this on Friday. And if you need anything, you know where to find me. And I will see you guys next week for a solo topic episode. If you have anything that you want me to talk about, you can DM me. And we are getting ready for our Tortured Poets Department episode with Veronica the following week. So I love you guys, and I will catch you next week. And until then, please enjoy this incredible interview with Miss Gracie Gold. Bye. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Miss Congeniality. I am so excited to be here with our very first Olympic guest. I realized when I was writing this episode that this is my first Olympian. So I have with me a 2014 Olympic bronze medalist in figure skating. She has just so many accolades, including a two-time U.S. national championship, amongst others. And she is also the author of the new New York Times best-selling author, Out of Shape, Worthless Loser, a memoir of figure skating, fucking up, and figuring it out, which was just recently released and was so, so good. So welcome to the show, Gracie Gold. I am so excited to have you here.
No, thank you for having me. I am so, so excited to be here and talk with you. Thanks for having me.
I just finished your book. I absolutely loved it, and I love the title, but I typically like to give my guests the opportunity to like elevator pitch themselves and tell me a little bit about themselves, because I can only glean so much about you through, you know, Wikipedia or the internet or your social media. So tell us who you are. Give me a little spiel. How are you feeling with everything? How's everything been going? All that good stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got the two big accolades, which are I'm an Olympic figure skater in 2014, two-time national champion. My memoir came out February 6th, and it made that bestsellers list. So that was super exciting, definitely validating. And yeah, I guess when it comes to the memoir, I like to tell people that you don't have to know or like or care about figure skating. It's not a skating book or a skating memoir. It really talks about everything in my life around skating. It does touch on the rather niche worlds of skating. And of course, there's the chapters of going to the Olympics, but there's so much around it. I'm kind of famous in my, you know, the niche sport of skating. And I guess maybe you could say in like Olympic athletes, for being a poster child of mental health or mental illness, like which, whatever you want to prefer. Cause I had a, again, at least in like the sporting world, like a semi-famous mental health crisis and was back in what, 2017 or 2018. And, I was in the Weight of Gold documentary that's on HBO with Michael Phelps and Lolo Jones and so many others. So I talk a lot about mental health and just, you know, some ADHD stuff and just what it's like to sometimes be a woman, especially growing up in, I think society can be really hard on women, but like the sport of figure skating in some ways can be as well. And yeah, that's kind of my pitch.
Well, I'm so excited to talk to you about like everything. I mean, you've been through so much. You are so inspiring, both like within figure skating and then just outside of figure skating. I'm wondering, like, how does it feel to have like the whole story out there? Because I know, like you said, you are very well known in the world of skating, but you know, now to have your book on such a main stage and like your story being read by skating fans and non-skating fans, how does it feel to have it all out there?
No, I mean, it feels great now, but before I had more anxiety before it came out. Cause obviously if you write a memoir about yourself and your life experiences, it is nice when people like it and receive your message well, and a lot of parts resonate. So, that was, I hate to say the word validating, but it was in some ways. And the process of writing the memoir was actually very cathartic. Most of the chapters, some were hard to put down in two words, but yeah, it was overall like this really incredible experience. And yeah, so I just can't believe like I wrote a book.
Did you always know that you wanted the medium to be a book? Like, why did you go the route of memoir instead of maybe doing like a documentary or like a super formal sit down interview? Was there a reason that you like gravitated toward a book? Have you always loved writing, or were you like, this is the best way to be in control of my story?
I mean, great question. I think that there was, for a time, I just felt like there was so much that to try to put it into like a sit down interview. And if so, you know, you'd have to pick like which platform, like which interviewer, and then to try to get picked up. And with the news cycle always changing, you know, I just felt, and I just already done a lot of interviews, but I feel like I really just needed to, there is something about just like putting it down in writing on paper, or on a Google Doc, like whatever, that I think I just, yeah, I think I wanted it to be a book. I mean, I'd love to, of course, get, I'd, some people ask like, oh, what about, you know, something for streaming services? Like, should we do a minute? But I wanted it to be, yeah, just to put down maybe old fashioned in writing and tell my story in the way stories have always been told, which is via book.
Yeah, and your voice is definitely like really captured in the book. So I think it was like definitely the right choice, but something that intrigued me. I'm curious, like, I really want to go through a bit of your history with your career and sort of what you went through in tandem, because I think it'll really resonate with my audience. But I'm curious what it was like to be sort of, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were one of like the foremost and like first people to come out and really discuss mental health and specifically eating disorders on a major scale within the sports world. What was that experience like? Because I think that you definitely paved the way for so many other people to feel comfortable talking about their own experiences struggling with disordered eating and eating disorders in the sports world. But I feel like 10, 8 years ago, it just wasn't the same landscape that we have now. So what was it like to be, you know, one of the first people to be like, I'm going to talk about this?
Well, so eating disorders are really kind of, I hate to say the word interesting, but they are a little bit. And even today, you know, eating disorders are still grossly misunderstood. And, you know, for example, like they're just for girls, right? It's one of just for us. And, you know, we're not even ready as a society to talk about men having eating disorders. And that they still are, you have to be, like, thinness is associated with having disordered eating, but that if you are, again, there's like a physical trait you have to have for society to feel like you have an eating disorder. And I feel like a lot of the behaviors that are, you know, stepping stones to that eating disorder pipeline are actually really glamorized, right? So I even think that the like bodybuilding world can have a lot of disordered eating. I think that it can be really glamorized in that world, you know, the pipeline from having like of ED recovery to being, you know, in physique or bikini or like whatever bodybuilding. I think that that, you know, it just is a more like seemingly healthy way to continue those same behaviors. I didn't really mean to become the spokesperson or poster child for an eating disorder or like mental illness in the athletic world. I went into treatment, like a rehab center, in the fall of 2017. And I kind of fell off the face of the earth for 45 days, right? So when I came back out and I did put out a press release of why I was withdrawing from my fall Grand Prix events and probably that whole season. And it wasn't Olympic cycle. So some people were like, oh, like what happened to Gracie Gold? So I, in my press release, you know, cited I'm in treatment for mental health concerns like disordered eating, depression, anxiety. We didn't include suicidal ideation at that time. It was told to me it wasn't like very palatable. Which whatever, just put a pin in that. And the response was overwhelmingly positive, but I also remember feeling horrified that I seemed to be the first, it was almost as if I was the first person with these problems. And I compared to the quote in Devil Wears Prada, like, oh, florals for spring, like groundbreaking, where I thought, oh, it's figure skater that struggles with disordered eating. Yeah, not news, but then the way that it seemed to be received as if this was the most groundbreaking thing that could happen. And I thought, oh yeah, this is kind of weird. Why don't we talk about, you know, in Olympic sports, you do have strength sports and then you have kind of endurance sports, but that's saying kind of like bigger versus thinner sports, you know, so in long distance running, marathon running, I think like high jump, pole vault, gymnastics, figure skating, like these are like thinner sports versus, you know, if you have shot put, bobsled, even sprinters, you know, they have different like physiques, if you compare them, right? So in an endurance sports, like long distance running, yeah, there's going to be a lot of disordered eating. And I just don't know why we, again, the fact that I seem to be the first is like crazy to me still.
Yeah. Was it, do you remember like that day where you put out the press release and like how you felt? Like, were you incredibly overwhelmed? Were you feeling like affirmed that people were like resonating with your story? Were you afraid to discuss some of those things and sort of share your truth in that way?
So I was like in the middle of it was a 45-day stay in treatment. So there were no phones, we read an actual newspaper for our news. So I thankfully didn't, I mean, I didn't see any social until, I don't know, several, like 3-4 weeks later. So I just didn't really concern myself with it at that time, but I felt, again, I didn't really know what I could say other than like, I could make up a physical injury, but for me, there was no alternative to not like I'm in a rehab center in the middle of Arizona. You know what I mean? Like, what am I going to say? I could say like, oh, I hurt my ankle and like, I'm out for the season, but I'm thinking, you know, I'm in the middle of a desert, in rehab. Obviously I'm not going to be competing at these events. And it didn't occur to me to like, not, to lie or like not have an honest answer. And yeah, I didn't have to see any social or any feedback for quite some time. But when I emerged from treatment, I was kind of astounded at just the amount of feedback I got and how much of it was like really positive and really understanding.
Yeah, I mean, that's really wonderful. And I think now, of course, you can like see the impact that you made then. But I'm sure at the time you were just like trying to save your own life effectively and, you know, like retake control. So it wasn't like top of mind to be like, how am I going to be an inspiration for other people? It just sort of naturally occurred.
Oh yeah. I wasn't like, you know what, I'm going to lead. I'm like, it's like groundbreaking. I'm just going to be a role model. Like I'm going to be brave. Like that was not, I didn't really consider myself doing anything like particularly interesting or brave. I actually, at the time, it became a chapter title, but one of the other titles that I really liked for the book was Failed Anorexic, because for a long time I felt like a loser in rehab because I just couldn't cut it, was kind of my thinking. I was like, wow, I don't know how all these other Olympians or how other people seem to exist, because I'm really like not doing it well. Like I couldn't keep my skating up. I couldn't keep my weight down. And you know, when I kind of lost my figure and was definitely did not look like an athlete anymore, I thought, oh, wow, I've like failed at this as well.
Wow. That's heavy, because it's like you're sort of putting so much pressure on yourself to achieve everything, to succeed in everything, even the things that you shouldn't be succeeding in. It's definitely like a perfectionist mindset, I would assume.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of my biggest, I would say like ailments, I guess, would be that I am a like crippling perfectionist, in a way that can be very helpful, right? Like I say, like perfectionism is a double-edged sword, right? Because when you are a perfectionist, you have really high standards. You're typically very high achieving, like shooting for the stars, and it's like your definition of whatever perfect is. And the downside though is that not everything has to be perfect, and that depending on where your standards are, and that you're kind of at war with yourself that nothing ever feels good enough. So all of that pushes you to achieve great things and work really hard, you know, shoot for the stars. When you fail, it is like catastrophic to one's well-being. And I say I'm a huge perfectionist. Like I've never been relaxed a day in my life. I take everything, you know, to a 12. Even my hobbies aren't even hobbies, they turn into like whole things. And yeah, that was again very helpful for skating and training, but ultimately, as per on brand for me, I took it way too far.
But before you like went to your treatment and you were obviously like reaching a breaking point and needing help, what do you wish you had then? Like what kind of support do you think would have maybe not prevented you from needing that treatment, because it sounds like it was necessary, but just what support in general do you wish you had back then? Because I think that, you know, especially with athletes, we kind of like don't consider sometimes even their physical health, like obviously their mental health, but sometimes it's just like we want them to perform so much that we're willing to overlook things. What kind of support do you feel like you wish you had back then?
If anything, I wouldn't even say, I mean, there's definitely some support that I could have had differently from others, but I think that I wish I would have been able to support myself more. I think just living, I lived with like an isolated and then very kind of life and was very sheltered, but also had traveled like so many part, like all over the globe and done all these like worldly things. But I think, and I say like, I was definitely part of the, like, the stigma with mental health that a lot of, I thought like a lot of it was behavioral, you know, the kind of like when you're depressed and people are like, okay, well go outside or like drink water, or, like exercise. And when you're clinically depressed, you know, just missing the understanding that you want to do those things, but you feel like the universe is like sitting on your chest, like crushing you, and that you kind of physically can't, but that, you know, that, you know, that, but I thought that depression, you know, it's like when you look at someone with addiction, well, like, okay, just go to rehab and get clean and like find another hobby. And you're like, yeah, that's not, there's like a lot of other stuff going on. You know, I thought that I wasn't thin enough to have like a real eating disorder, or I thought that like everyone, no, I was like, no, like all people hate themselves when they look in the mirror, like all people value their self-worth based on their accomplishments and how thin they are. I just like didn't understand for a long time what I was experiencing. So like my depression, for example, wasn't what I read in my like health class textbook, which is it's after a traumatic event and it lasts for a certain period of time. You know, the world is blue, you cry a lot, and like people bring you casseroles. Like, it wasn't, I didn't get that. Sometimes mental health manifests in different ways. So for me, I just became extremely introverted. I started isolating. I became just really apathetic. If anything, I would say the world was just kind of gray. And that I just really stopped caring, not just about myself, but like about others. You know, I was less empathetic. I was less sympathetic. I just, like, everything was less interesting and I was less interesting. And I felt for a long time like I just kind of lost my edge, and that I just was like, oh, I don't have what it takes anymore to become an Olympian. And I just didn't have a macro lens. You know, I just was so in my world the whole time, in like that skater world of like training day in, day out. Skating's the only thing that matters. So I wish that I would have had better coping mechanisms. I wish that I would have been more aware that, oh, maybe these are symptoms of like a greater issue. And in my life, I think that I just didn't have, I had people around me that really tried, I think, to help. But it just was in a language that I couldn't understand, if that makes sense. I almost just felt like there was this, some people I've heard describe it as like glass or like a snow globe kind of effect, where you can see that person, but you just can't get to them. You know, I think people cared about me, but again, just in this language that we just couldn't quite understand each other, and it just wasn't landing. But I do wish that I would have been able to help myself more, especially in the early days. I just didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, totally. And speaking to the idea that like there were people that were trying to help you, but you couldn't get there with them. I read a lot that, you know, you were described as like a Grace Kelly, like this beautiful, charismatic, sharp, just like almost like ethereal being. And I can assume that there would be a lot of pressure when you're feeling inside like I'm not good enough, and the people on the outside aren't understanding how you're feeling and are also, you know, putting that image onto you. Was there like a feeling that you had to uphold that? And was there a pressure that, was there like a disconnect between what you felt and you know, what you were supposed to be in the public eye?
Yeah, the ice princess kind of Grace Kelly, you know, the Barbie doll. You know, I know that I look like blonde, perky Republican, but I, you know what I mean? But I didn't, and all of my media was, and again, I kind of like fed into it, because when other people were being asked, I'll never forget this, like before the Olympics in Sochi, Russia, this was kind of that, we're discussing how it's like illegal to be gay in Russia, right? Like the LGBTQIA plus community was like not allowed there. And just how like, okay, well, you're going to Russia, kind of the concept of like, you know, by going to the Olympics, are you like supporting Russia? Which of course, like, we're just like some athletes like doing our sport. We didn't pick the place. You know, the bigger conversation is like the Olympic committee that like whoever won the bid, why are they having it in countries with like human rights violations? And so some of my competitors that were gay or family members that were gay were asked like some of these heavier political questions. And then I remember I got asked about my CoverGirl campaign and like what lipstick I was wearing. And to be fair, I didn't mind that at the time, because like, what a softball question in comparison. You know, I just got to kind of cheese it up and be like the pretty princess ice skater. I didn't have to. Some interviews I don't even remember, because it was all just scripted and I knew my script. But as I got older, and I just never really, that mold was never authentic to me. And it did get tiresome trying to be this, you know, Midwestern, PG, just like the kind of very palatable to everyone is how I would describe it. Again, the like ethereal Grace Kelly, always refines, you know, with the red lipstick and the pearls. And like, I growing up, this sounds like I'm like a pick me girl, but I really was this like tomboy. I didn't have a lot of female friends. I just had my sister and I, you know, I played on all the boys teams and I wasn't girly at all. And from a young age, I had an issue with profanity. I like cursed like a sailor my whole life. I was like the opposite in Grace Kelly in a lot of ways. And so I remember thinking, wow, all of these people really adore this version of Gracie Gold. And it's not really me though. And I think that if they like this version, that they're not going to like the real me. And so that's where I started kind of struggling. And then I felt, you know, by the time I was in my 20s, I was in too deep. It wasn't until I had one of the chapters in my book is called Nuclear Meltdown, because I very much had a nuclear meltdown at this relatively high profile Team USA summer camp called Champs Camp. And I really just told everybody to like fuck off. And I think that it was, in some ways, I think that's what landed me in treatment, is because I think it was so jarring for everyone. So in some ways, maybe it was ultimately saved my life, the juxtaposition between what I was feeling inside versus what I was portraying outside. But yeah, it's hard to be, yeah, like the ethereal Grace Kelly, just like plastic Barbie doll all the time, especially when you're not like that as a person, and especially after like a terrible event or some sort of life crisis, and you just smile and stuff it down. Kind of the Stepford Wives, like eventually the facade just like starts to crack.
Yeah. When did you, do you feel like you started to, you know, come into your own and start, you know, behaving as the real you when you came out of treatment? Or was there sort of like a time period where you were trying to grapple with, you know, this version that people wanted you to be, this sort of like Grace Kelly Barbie doll and who you really were? Or were you able to kind of like naturally just come into your own and be yourself? And sort of like, what was it like, and how did you sort of like come into your own and start, you know, saying, you know, this is who I am, not who you think I am?
I mean, definitely after treatment, I had, it was like a little bit more freeing, and I, you know, there was something that I very much enjoyed about rehab, honestly, is that it was, you know, people all in like the same age group, and we didn't know each other outside. So it wasn't until like the last week, maybe, that I don't even know how it came to be, but they were like, oh my God, you're an Olympian? Like, what? Like, oh, it would like weird not to mention that. And I was like, no, it just kind of never came up and like wasn't relevant. And I just was very much a regular person. And I really got to be myself with no expectations. I will say I had a little bit of trouble post-treatment, because a lot of people, I feel like I got labeled like an inspiration or really brave or kind of, you know, like leading this charge and breaking. And I thought, I am a cautionary tale at best. I was like, oh, I'm not an inspiration to the younger generation. I don't really think of myself as that brave. And I do remember feeling a little bit unsure how to navigate that, because I just thought, oh no, that's not... I don't think I'm your person. Again, like I'm a cautionary tale at best. So I felt kind of strange, and I didn't know my place in the skating world at all. And then subsequently kind of in the real world. So I wouldn't say I immediately found my feet and kind of knew what was going on. I feel like it took me a while to kind of reopen up back to the regular world. And then in the skating world, I would honestly say after COVID, because I kind of got a little bit going, and then COVID hit. So then we were like all trapped inside. And then I would just say in like the last 2-3 years, I feel like I've kind of found my feet in the world, and subsequently am like really kind of at peace with who I am and very comfortable with that. But it took a while. It was a journey.
Yeah. And it's really crazy that, you know, everybody was projecting this version of you onto you for your whole life, which definitely added to, you know, the mental health crisis that you went through. And then you come out of treatment and everyone's projecting this new version of you onto you. And you're like, I'm not ready for that. I just want to be me and figure it out. Like, I didn't ask for any of these like projections from the media and just from people in general.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. And like, to be fair, I don't want to say I played into both, but yeah, definitely when I was younger, if there's something kind of to answer your previous question that I would have changed, is like, I wouldn't have played into the Grace Kelly kind of that Midwestern, like all American
media, darling, you know,
Yeah. The like America's sweetheart thing, as much, but I feel like I played really heavily into it when I was younger, 'cause that was that did sound nice, you know, and I was in my formative years of like 15, 16. And I was like, I don't really know who I am, but like, that sounds nice, what these people are kind of putting on me. But then I got trapped and I didn't. Yeah. And as you said, like after treatment, again, just being like the amount of people that are like, you are, I think, just the most incredible person and you are so inspirational and you are, you know, you have this gift to share with the world. And, you know, there's that voice in my head being like, oh my God, if only they knew that you're like a piece of shit. Like you're like a bad, so just kind of the inner voice and then when people are telling you and trying to find out, you know, I think that the truth always lies somewhere in the middle.
100%. Did you ever consider walking away at any point during this? Because I know you're still involved in the world of skating and obviously came back to the world of skating. Was there ever a moment that you were like, I am throwing in the towel, I'm done. Like, I just want to be Gracie Gold separate from all of this.
So I did briefly try that. And then I started coaching like a little bit a couple months after treatment just for like, just not just for like some money, but also like for something to do. And I just, while I tried to figure out where I was going to go next. And then from coaching, once I kind of started that, then, you know, some skating clubs across like the country would reach out and we're like, oh, would she come do a seminar? Would like you come coach here for a week? And so then I started doing more and more coaching. And I ended up moving to like suburbs of Philadelphia and then like Delaware area. And then it was a slippery slope because then a coach's like, oh, like, do you want to ever do like shows or stuff? Like, do you, the coach is kind of working under, he's like, we could definitely get your jumps back. Like if you wanted to just do a double axel and a triple toe, but you know, you should do like shows again, if you're still like physically, if that's something that you'd like to do and you're not like, if physically your body can do it. Cause I was only like 22, 22 or 23. And I thought, I don't know, maybe shows would be fun. So then I started skating just a little bit and then just a little bit more. And then I was like, oh, I do really kind of miss skating and being involved in the skating world. And yeah. And then the rest is like history and I'm back. But yeah, I did briefly leave. But I did find my way back cautiously. I didn't just like throw myself back in, very cautious at every step of the road, but I, you know, and I just had to like learn that separate, that it wasn't skating that what I thought like ruined my life, that it was really my poor coping mechanisms and it was everything around skating that kind of led me down a rather dark path.
That kind of leads nicely into my next question, which is I'm just curious like how you reclaimed your love and joy from something that also brought you like so much trauma and pain. Like what did that like healing your relationship to figure skating look like?
I mean, good question. I think, so first off, I wasn't even sure if I guess I'm a curious person and I am a, like, with the exception of a few things, like I'll try anything once because how do I know if I don't like something until I've tried it? And, I think with skating, I was like, oh, is there a way to like, can you come back to skating when you're as far gone as I was? You know, can I enjoy skating if I'm not the best at it? You know, as I used to be national champion and now if I'm like middle of the pack, do I still like skating or did I just like being good at it? You know, was it really skating's fault that I now with better coping mechanisms, can I handle the different pressures better? Can I be more normal? Can I enjoy it skating in a more normal capacity? And kind of coming back to the sport, you know, I had kind of a chance to reinvent myself. And if so, you know, what does that look like? And I just kind of took it one step at a time. And I just, yeah, again, make sure, do I still like skating in any capacity? Do I like it if I'm not as good? Physically, can I still do it? Can I enjoy it, as I said, in the normal capacity without overdosing on it, so to speak? And so yeah, just every step of the way trying to figure, like checking all those boxes. Cause I knew if I hit one and it was like, oh, I actually only liked skating cause I was really good at it. And I actually don't like it if I'm not as good, then I would have left or just switched to coaching or, you know, something else in the world.
That's such an interesting point, because I think sometimes we forget like the reason that we like things, especially things that we started doing when we were like 7, 6, 8 years old, when we weren't really even like consciously choosing them. It's like we liked them because we were good at them. Like for the most part, people that, you know, are dancers and figure skaters and horseback riders and all those things, you just like had a natural knack for it when you were a child and you were good at it. So of course you're going to fall for it. But it's like when all of that is said and done, do you still love it? Is really interesting.
Yeah, and that was a concept I had to go, and I still like would struggle with. Like this wasn't just a, you know, this has been like a journey. But you know, if you, and I, yeah, I feel the same way. Like I feel you can apply it to a lot of things. You know, like do I really just like this thing, or am I good at it, or like do I dislike this thing, or am I just not? Is it just not coming easy to me? You know, I really. I remember my sister and I took a photography class in high school, and although I wasn't very good at it, especially compared to her, I was like, oh no, I actually really like photography. I'm just actually not super good at it. So like, you know, but just kind of trying to enjoy like being an amateur at something, right? Just doing something for the love of it. And that's like, I'm a big fan of adult skating. So that's just anyone who started not when they were a kid, because I think that we should normalize adults having hobbies or doing something because you love it and not doing something because you can make a side hustle out of it because you're really good at it. You know, like I crochet a lot. It's like my hobby, and the amount of people that are like, oh my God, you should open an Etsy account, or you should do this, or like, how can we like mass market, sell this? And I'm like, I don't want to enter that world, because like I just like doing it, and I just want to keep this one thing as something that I really like doing just for me. Even if it's like I'm really good at it or not really good at it, like I just I'm making this cardigan right now just for me, not for any reason, not for any purpose, not for any donation, just simply because I enjoyed making this cardigan.
Totally. I completely resonate with that. People are always like, do you have a Goodreads account? Like, we want you to start a book club. Like, do you have this? Do you have that? And I'm like, reading has to be something that I don't post on the internet as much. You know, like I'll post when I'm reading a book or maybe a review when I'm done, but I don't want to do it in any way that's like monetized necessarily, or like I'm doing it for clicks and views and everything like that, because then it doesn't become fun anymore. It doesn't become like a place I can go to unwind and like take care of myself. It becomes work.
Yeah. And when stuff starts feeling like work, I think that for some people, I feel like that has to, that seems to suit them. But yeah, I'm like, I already have lots of stuff as work. And so yeah, there's always like, I need like one or two things that aren't work, that don't feel like work, that don't fall into the job, that I don't have to put like on the due day, like, oh, I need to have this crocheted by this day. Or it's like, oh, I have to read all of this week. Now it starts feeling like work, on top of my other like two or three things that are like actual jobs, too much.
Absolutely too much. Do you have advice or recommendations for people looking to like reclaim joy with childhood passions or childhood jobs in your case, that maybe they have fraught relationships with, or they had experienced trauma with, but they're looking to sort of like reclaim that and bring it back into their life in a positive way?
I would say, and I'm not sure if this is like applicable to everything, but like trying to consume it in a different space of some sort. So like when I was coaching, I kind of started skating around a little bit. Cause when you coach, you don't really do a lot, right? You know, you can demonstrate stuff, but you're not doing laps. But I was asked, and I don't normally choreograph, right? Which is where you like create the program. I kind of got roped into choreographing part of this one program in the step sequence. And I remember I just got so frustrated with the student because, you know, I had drawn it, like walked her through it. And I was like, just this, watch this. And so then I did the whole pattern for her, and I was like, wow, I really love this. Really love skating. And I had gone with some of my friends from treatment to like a cosmic skate, like I don't know, like Friday night or something, but I took them all skating and none of them had ever been, and just consuming skating in a different way. So like just taking my friends skating, you know, or like choreographing, but it's not like for me that people are going to watch. Consuming it in that different way was really helpful. So if I had a friend that had like burned out on a sport, as an athlete, I'm not sure that I would ask, but that's something where like, oh, well, like, you know, take me rowing. Like, I've never been rowing. Like, can we go practice like on the river in the morning, you know, consuming it with a friend or in like a very non wherever that like in a, yeah, in a way that wasn't traumatic. How can you try, like, I guess, I don't know if it's applicable to like every single thing, but yeah, if you had a childlike thing, experiencing in a different font, I guess maybe I would say.
No, I love that. That's excellent advice. I guess kind of going off of that, what are your like big hopes and dreams for yourself going forward? Do you want to keep skating a part of your life? Do you want to continue to coach or teach? Do you want to write more and speak more about it? Kind of where are you headed? Because I feel like you're in this period where like there's so much opportunity coming your way and you've really opened up so many new doors with this book and telling your story. I'm not allowed to pick favorites, but we are going to talk about one of my most favorite sponsors of Miss Congeniality. It is so fitting. It is so fabulous. Thank you so much to Book of the Month for sponsoring today's episode. You guys have heard me talk about Book of the Month before, but it is seriously the absolute number one best way to discover new, diverse, interesting, emerging authors and different books. I feel like sometimes it's so hard to like find that book that just sparks something inside of you. And like you finish a book like that and you're like, when am I going to be able to find the next book that I love that's going to, you know, join the list of my favorite books? And the way that I've really done that is through Book of the Month. It is so easy to sign up and to get started with a Book of the Month club membership. Every single month, Book of the Month offers a few new selections. They really cut out the clutter and save you time and just makes it so easy for you to decide on a book. They really focus on new and emerging authors, which I love. And it's really fun to get to pick a new read and then get it sent to you. It just feels like you're giving yourself a little gift. And they really do curate just incredible, incredible new titles for you to choose from. And all of the books are good. So you really can't go wrong. And that's my favorite part. Like, I feel like every time I get my book of the month, I'm like, oh, I love this. And that's because they're just curating excellent books. And that's, you know, takes out a lot of the legwork for you doing your own research. You know, I think that sometimes reading doesn't feel relaxing anymore because you're like, well, I have to find a book and then I have to research if I'm going to like it. And then what if I don't like it? Book of the month takes all that legwork out and really allows you to just settle in with a book. Reading really should be fun, and this has made reading fun for me again and has allowed me to really reclaim reading as a hobby. And of course, I have a code for you guys because of course I do. The code is PASTEL, P-A-S-T-E-L, all caps, and that's $5 for your first book in April. I'm not going to lie to you guys. If you don't run to Book of the Month and get a $5 book, you're being foolish. $5 for your first book with code PASTEL, P-A-S-T-E-L. That's on Book of the Month Club. And I mean, run, don't walk. Happy reading. I love you guys. And thank you to Book of the Month for sponsoring today's episode.
Yeah, no, I feel like in a lot of ways I have, but also in a way that sometimes I sometimes have to remind myself that not knowing exactly where I'm going doesn't have to make me anxious, that it can actually just be really freeing. And so I'm just kind of taking me where the wind blows at the moment. So if that's doing more speaking engagements, I love talking. I have a lot of coaching gigs coming up and some travel stuff. So yeah, just seeing where the book stuff takes me and the speaking and the skating and just kind of, I think I'll find a path as it emerges like throughout the rest of the year. But I stopped making even 3-year plans like 10 years ago because none of them turned out even remotely. nothing turned out the way I thought it would turn out, like literally at all. So I just try to make like maximum 6-month plans maybe. I have an idea of what's coming in the future, but it'll become obvious, I think, you know, and if it's commentary, yeah, more shows myself, more coaching, just really trying to keep my options open. Cause yeah, I think when I see like what I'm a more concrete path, I think I'll know it when I see it.
Yeah. I love that too. Cause it especially juxtaposes like, I'm sure how rigid your life was when you were like competitively skating and like how rigid your schedule was. It must be freeing and relaxing and also comforting to know that like you could go anywhere and you're open to it. It's like a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it again, sometimes I feel anxious because I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing with my life at all or where I'm going, but I have to be like, no, that's like the beauty of it is like I can actually go anywhere and like do anything, and that there are so many potential opportunities. And yeah, maybe there's someone has an opportunity like for me that's listening right now, and it'll take my life in a totally different direction. Just trying to be like free, and I am not an easygoing person, but I am trying to be like I've never been relaxed a day in my life, but I am trying to be. Yeah, I'm like easy breezy, kind of white knuckling it, but like,
You're easing into it. You're easing into the relaxation.
yeah, I'm kind of trying to get used to this concept. But yeah, I think that when I think I'll know it when I see like a more permanent path or a more long-term journey when I see it. I think it'll become obvious that something's pulling me in one direction or the other.
I love that. So I love to end my episodes asking a little bit about things that have nothing to do with figure skating, things that have nothing
Love.
to do with like what, we just talked about for the last 40 minutes. So like, tell me about some of these hobbies. You mentioned crocheting, but like, who are you outside of this? Like, what do you like to do on the weekends? What are your favorite foods? Like, do you have like a dating life or a friend circle? Like, what kind of like makes you tick that is not work?
Yeah, so I mean, as far as friends, like good and bad about the skating world is that sometimes it can your friend group can be in multiple countries. And so I have a twin sister who's in California, so I go out to LA a lot as often as I can to see her. I have friends here where I am right now in Colorado Springs, back east. And like love going out in some capacity, hang out with them. I will go out for, I would say like margs are my favorite.
Love.
Yeah, I love a marg or a mule. I know tequila is not for everyone, but yeah, like if when we when I do hang out with my friends, it typically is like, oh yeah, let's grab a marg or a mule somewhere. I love any and all Asian food, specifically Japanese, and I do love dim sum. Mexican food and Indian food as well. Yeah, crochet pretty aggressively. Especially I was really all of last year, I had like a foot injury and then like this mystery hip injury. So I like tried to find something to do that could release some like dopamine, serotonin while like sitting down, like aka not exercising or going out. So I started crocheting. It has become both a hobby and sometimes a problem. Like the amount of yarn in this room is not, there's like it's too much. I don't even know how it all got there. And yeah, I mean, let's see. I have one group of friends here that they're like moviegoers, and I hadn't been to a movie, like into an actual theater since COVID, but they have the like AMC like movie rewards or movie pass or something like
Yeah.
this. And so they go like almost every weekend. So I actually have enjoyed going to the theater as of late. Typically I just like really bad at I am an action movie or a scary movie person. I have an unrefined taste in both liquor and film. Yeah, saw Jason Statham's Beekeeper when it came out.
So
Art.
that's your rec. That's your latest rec.
Yeah, and I really wish that I had a more refined palate when it came to several things. Again, like I like don't drink beer or wine. Like I only like hard liquor, which I think is trashy. It has to be. Like I mean, I don't unless you count Moscato as wine, and I don't think that that's not that's juice, right? And same with movies. Like I love an action franchise. Love an action movie. Last weekend saw Immaculate with Sydney Sweeney.
Love.
Yeah, it was. I did like it. Some of the there were two like gory scenes that I did have to like.
Yeah, shield the eyes.
Yeah, but yeah, love. I think The Conjuring is a beautiful love story between Ed and Lorraine. I. And I stand by it's probably one of my hotter takes, but I stand by it. they're so in love that they fight the devil together, please.
It's very romantic. It's very romantic.
I want what they have.
Yeah. So I have to ask you, because I asked my followers like what kind of questions they wanted me to ask you. A few people said, we need to know about her friendship with Taylor Swift. Do you mind sharing about your past friendship with Taylor Swift? Because I did not know that you had a friendship with Taylor Swift.
So I think that friendship is a strong word, because even back in like 2014, like even 10 years ago, she was still like wildly famous, right? And now she's like the most famous person in the world. And then in between then, right, like the phone call thing, and then she like came back, like, you know, disappeared off the face of the earth. So like friendship, like we hung out on a few occasions, and it was after the Olympics. She had DM'd me and was like, oh yeah, if you're ever in New York or LA, because she'd like watched me skate and the team and the singles, and if you're ever in LA or New York, let me know. So our first hangout is she was in Los Angeles, and we went out for sushi in Hermosa. And I remember that she was like, oh, well, and I had walked because we lived in Hermosa Beach, and it was the sushi place like by the pier. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can walk. It's a couple blocks. She's like, no, I'm like, I should drive you. And I remember having to text my mom and sister, like, Taylor Swift is going to drop me off. And we were talking about pets, and I was like, anything, she wants to meet the dog. So I was like, you guys have about 10 minutes to I don't know, like clean. And of course I come home, and my mom and sister are like posed. Like my mom is like was like making something, and my sister's like on the couch like with the dogs. And that was hilarious.
That's wild.
And then I invited her to on the Stars on Ice tour after the Olympics. We had the show in Long Island, and I said, yeah, I don't know what you're doing or if you're free. And like, I'm sure that, you know, security, like it's an arena, right, can like work something out. I was like, I don't think Stars on Ice is not, I wish it was, it's not a sellout arena. So I was like, I don't think that there should be a hardship there. But I was like, if you and some others like would like to come, I'm sure that I can get you as many tickets as you would like. And I went to her apartment the night before and like baked cookies and had dinner. And like, yeah, I went to, I even forget where we went, but then she came to the show and like went backstage, and that was fun. And then the other time we hung out is I went to Catalina Islands, on a chartered, I guess it's a yacht.
I love how you go, friendship is a stretch. This is more than any other person probably has ever experienced with that woman. Like, seriously insane.
Oh yeah. And it was so much fun. I'd never been to Catalina Island, and, the Haim sisters were there, and Lord and, Jamie King and like her husband, and Taylor's dad was there, and, just had a great time. It had lunch, walked around Catalina, got some ice cream. Just a really, that hangout was like really special to me, because I was still on kind of technically like bed rest ish because I'd had this foot fracture. It's a long story, but it was classified as a fracture, but really it was like more of a dislocation. It turns out there's a bone in your foot called a cuboid. It turns out you can kind of like, it can like sublax like downwards into the soft tissue. And so mine was sublaxed for a long time and it cracked, but I got labeled as a fracture. So kind of legally, like, so that they don't send injured athletes in a competition, you have to take like 6 to 8 weeks off. So even though the bone was put back in, I just had to sit there for 6 or 8 weeks as we got closer and closer to the national championships. And I was really not living my best life at that time. Like one of our dogs had passed away. And then all of a sudden I get a text from Taylor like, hey, do you want to go to like Dana Point today? Like we were maybe going to go out to Catalina Island. And I was like, yes,
I do. Like, I need this. I need this.
This could not have come at a better time. I was like, my mom was going to do something later, and I was like, you can't, because I need, my sister had taken the car. We still shared a car at that time. And I was like, mom, I don't know what you're doing at like 11:30, but I need you to drive me to Dana Point.
Like, I'm going to hang out with Taylor Swift.
I was like, I'd like to go on a yacht today. I think that that would make me feel a lot better.
Do you have a favorite Taylor Swift era or album?
Really good question. There's like certain songs from each album that I like. I don't even know if I would say like just one era over the other. Also, because I think based on the age that I consume them would be different. So, like Teardrops on My Guitar really hit, when I was like what, like 12. I don't know why it did, but it did. And I did see her in concert for 1989. It was fucking awesome. Like her concerts really are art. Like it's like a different, it's not even a concert, it's an experience. I did really like Reputation's full of bops. I would say, I mean, Lover is just like a great song. Archer, I liked her. I really liked the Folklore album. I've entered like at kind of a little bit right before that came out. I kind of entered this like folk era music. A little bit less than before I was like very much like white girl pop.
I like it.
So yeah, it's more like 3 to 4 songs on every album I think are bangers, like Cruel Summer, Death by a Thousand Cuts. But there are also some songs that I might skip over on certain albums, but like Antihero is great. Sorry, it is. Love it. Yeah, I guess I'm kind of a mix.
You're allowing many tastes and flavors. You don't like just one.
Yeah, it depends on the vibe of the day, but that's what I think is really not just because of our, if you like want to call it like past friendship, but a lot of people that are like, oh, every Taylor song sounds the same. I'm like, actually, no, it doesn't. Because there are, she just has produced so much music in such a short amount of time. Like, who else has that many albums? As well as, there's like an album for every vibe.
100%.
There absolutely is. Some people say, oh my God, it all sounds the same. I mean, I guess if you listen to every song on the album, they might kind of sound the same, but that's why they're on the same fucking album together, you know? Like,
That would make sense.
yeah, Oda's all of 1989 of like, and like an upbeat pop vibe. Yeah, that's like,
Yeah, that's an album for you.
that's how that works. To my knowledge, that's how that works. Like, I'm obsessed with like Noah Kahan, and I'm, yeah, some of this stuff, I would say it all has kind of the same vibe because it's on an album together.
With the same voice, so that would make
Yeah, with the
sense.
same voice and the same person, and they were all kind of written in a similar time period. So that's how,
That's how that makes sense.
like, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Love it. Well, Gracie, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing everything. Like, I know that you say you don't want to be like seen as, the most inspiring, but your book really inspired me and hopefully so many other people who read it or will read it. But can you tell everybody like where they can find you, where they can get the book, all that good stuff?
Yeah, so the main/only social I'm on is Instagram. So that's at GracieGold95. And you can buy Out of Shape, Worthless Loser, all one word, any place that you can buy books. So Barnes and Noble, your local bookshop, Borders.com, wherever you buy books, Amazon, whatever you're into. And you can get the audiobook that I recorded. Audible's the probably best one for that.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much. Everybody, read her book, follow along. You are amazing, and I really appreciate you being here and being on an episode.
No, thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
All right. Bye, guys. I'll see you next week. Thanks.